Mr. Camacho, ready. Hold on. Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Ready? Testing, testing. Oh, it does work. We on the record?
Yeah.
Okay, we're back on the record in OPA-PA-09-005 in the appeal of Guam Community Improvement Foundation, Inc. This is day two of the hearing for the purchasing agency's motion for confirmation of substantial interest. It is the 29th of September, 2009. We are in the sixth floor of the DNA building in Agana, Guam, the DISID conference room. I'm Anthony Camacho. I'm presiding as hearing officer over this proceeding. Will the other members of the Office of the Public Accountability staff please identify themselves for the record?
Doris Flores, Public Auditor.
Laura
Harris, Audit
Supervisor.
Anne Camacho, Admin Officer.
Thank you. Will the appellant's counsel please identify himself and any institutional representatives seated with him, please?
Yes, good morning. I'm Randall Tunliff, legal counsel for Guam Community Improvement Foundation, and Mr. Tony Strode from the foundation as well.
Thank you, Mr. Cunliffe. Will the purchasing agency's counsel please identify himself and any institutional representatives with him today?
Benjamin Abrams speaking, Assistant Attorney General, representing Gov Guam DPW as purchasing agency. I have no institutional representative with me today. I'm appearing alone.
Yes, and we have one counsel for an interested party that has entered its appearance. Please identify yourself.
Good morning. Joyce Kang for IBC. With me is Mr. Miguel Verdalio, who is
representing the board. Okay, is Mr. Verdalio going to sit at the table with you? He can if you so choose.
I think that he prefers to sit with
you. Very well. It's entirely up to you. Okay, where we left off yesterday, we were still in the purchasing agency's presentation of evidence. We had completed the testimony of, was it Ms. Akwazi? Ms. Affligui. And Mr. Abrams, you may call your next witness.
I think in the haste of including with Mrs. Affligui before 5:15, I neglected to ask her to authenticate our Exhibit A, which is a petition by students and a cover on that. Unless Mr. Cunliffe has any objection, maybe we could just admit that without the necessity of recalling Mrs. Appleby just to authenticate the exhibit. I don't know.
Are you going to use that with any of your other witnesses, Mr.
No.
Abrams? Okay.
There's only one more witness after Mrs. Appleby, and that's Gail Hendricks. That would be it.
Okay, well, were you going to use the exhibits for any part of the testimony of Ms. Hendricks?
No.
All right, so I think it's already filed. It's the reason we're doing this here is this is we're trying to preserve the exhibits that are actually viewed by the witnesses during the proceeding.
I see.
Okay. So those are already, but if you want me to officially admit that in evidence and put it over there, it's up to you.
As long as it's properly before the OPA as evidence in support of the confirmation of substantial interest, I'm fine to leave it where it is.
Okay, well, Mr. Cunliffe, do you have any response to that request?
I understand your position is that they've already been submitted to as part of the record, and they don't have to formally admit it.
That is correct, and I'll just reiterate that, as I stated earlier, the reason why we're trying to preserve these exhibits are so that this is part of the transcript and that they remain part of the, if there's a transcript requested, that these are the exhibits that were given to the witnesses during the proceeding, so there's no issue with that. But already your petition is part of the record and certainly will be considered with your motion.
Thank you very much. Okay. I'll call on Ms. Hendricks at this point.
Very well.
doesn't go, nobody else.
Well, don't be worried, you're okay.
Ms. Hendricks, please remain standing, and so you can be signed in and take the oath.
Solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I do. Thank you.
Ms. Hendricks, please have a seat. Mr. Abrams, your witness.
Thank you. Ms. Hendricks, would you please state your name, sir?
Gail Frances Hendricks.
And what do you do on a day-to-day basis, Ms. Hendricks?
I am a professor at the university. I teach foundation classes in the School of Education.
And do you have any connection with the JFK High School at its existing location at Pigeon?
I'm the chair of the JFK Exit Task Force, which was tasked with the job of trying to find a solution to moving JFK out of GW on a double session. As far as the interim campus goes, I have little to nothing to do with that, nor did the task force.
Are you aware of the...
Mr. Abrams, please talk into the mic.
Oh, sorry. Are you then aware of... the conditions at the temporary campus?
Yes, I am, because I have been up there on several occasions.
Why did you go there?
The initial walkthrough that was requested by the governor, I got a call 2 hours before it asking that I attend, which I did. And then since then, I have been up there for meetings. And I have also been up there to help teachers move stuff because I have a larger car.
Well, what was the approximate date of the walkthrough with the governor?
That was February or March, I believe. I'm not exactly sure
of this year?
Yeah, early on, very early on.
Yeah, well, so what sort of condition was the campus in then? Was there any, had there been a school actually constructed at that point?
No, they were in the process of setting up the school. They were putting in classrooms. The buildings were pretty much, I think they had just completed what I was told at the time, where they just completed removing all of the hazardous materials, you know, the asbestos, and they were in the process of putting up temporary walls for classrooms.
When is the most recent observation of the temporary campus that you made?
Last Saturday.
And had you been seeing the campus on a regular basis prior to last Saturday?
I was probably up there 1 to 2 times, three, probably between August, I think the first time I was up there was August 14, and then I probably two to three times after that, plus Saturday.
And what would have been the reason for your having gone there then?
As I said earlier, I was trying to help the teachers to move their personal belongings that they had moved to their houses. They didn't have the car space, so I assisted them to provide transportation for their belongings.
Are you aware of the accreditation status of the temporary campus?
Yes, I am.
Now, how are you aware of that?
I keep up to date on the accreditation issues. I serve on accreditation teams here in the Pacific mostly. So I keep track, plus the fact that I have been at JFK for many years, so I keep up to date on what's happening with them.
Are you familiar then with the accreditation status of that campus?
They are on a 2-year status right at the moment.
What does that mean?
It means that they are coming off of a very difficult time. They had a 1-year, which was the reason for last spring's visit. So the maximum they could have gotten was a 2-year, which is what they got. But
how do you know about that?
I've read the report.
What report?
I've read the report that was submitted by the visiting committee, and also the school has been informed that they have a 2-year. They have announced that.
Showing you what has been received in evidence as Exhibit J, I would ask you if this looks like the report that you just mentioned in your testimony.
Mr. Abrams, could you please use the Exhibit J that was entered and is before the witness?
Those are, sure, is that it?
Yeah, those are all the exhibits that were admitted yesterday.
That's
this looks like part of it. I think there was a little bit more.
Well, what you see of it is what you saw.
Yes.
That is the report.
Yes.
At least what of it is there is the report that you previously testified about. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you stated that that accreditation expires when?
Or? It will expire June 30th, 2011.
And is the continued accreditation of the school contingent on anything?
Well, one of the major recommendations that was put forth by WASC was that JFK would be in a new building on the previous campus.
Okay, if that didn't happen, what is your opinion as to the accreditation status of the temporary facility?
I think it's in jeopardy.
Hmm. Now, let's say that you're right. Assuming for a moment that you're right, then it is in jeopardy. Why would it be in jeopardy?
The curriculum that is inhibited by the space and the conditions would be a major concern to any visiting team, especially in the areas of the sciences. The arts classrooms, they are too small to meet contractual limits. That would be a major concern. The physical education facilities are drastically inadequate, and that would be a major concern. Another major concern would be the fact that absolutely no interscholastic program can be held at the campus at the present time.
What is an interscholastic program?
Well, the sports program. The sports program can't be held at the campus. They can't do their practices there. They can't play their games there. And for that reason, those particular activities are limiting the number of students who can participate in them because they have to get to and from whatever practice site they have. So the WASC would be very concerned because the extracurricular programs are considered a major part of any high school program.
Well, Mr. Abrams, can we please just go for a brief recess? Okay, can we go off the record for just 1 second? I'm sorry. Okay, now that the brief recess is over, please continue, Mr. Abrams. I'm sorry for the interruption.
There were two other areas. They would be very concerned about security and the health and safety of the students on the campus, and a biggie would be ADA compliance.
Well, you just heard during our break, brief recess just now, the hearing officer explained to one of the media representatives the necessity of keeping this door open because of an emergency. That reminded me to ask you, is the layout of that temporary facility adequate in case of a rapid evacuation need of all 2,300 students in the case of an emergency?
I think there are some difficulties, big difficulties, especially in the gym area where there are several classrooms that are inside of the gym. They would have to exit out through the gym to get out of the building. That would be a concern. I think that...
How many classrooms are we talking about?
Four at least that I know of.
Maybe five.
Possibly. They have no exit doors except through the gym.
So if there was an earthquake, for example, and the roof of the gym fell in, those students could be trapped in the classroom, is that correct?
Yes.
What about the adequacy of the hallway size? If that volume of students had to exit the building in a hurry, are the physical dimensions of the school hallways adequate for rapid evacuation of the
Not out of the gym. And the hallway between, you know, because the way it's set up, and there's a room and a hallway and then a long building, okay? And there's doors on, there's one door out of the building on this side. On this side, there's a front door and a back door. There's an upstairs door and an upstairs door. They're on the opposite ends of the building. There are no doors in between, so classes would have to exit out. And there could be a major traffic jam at that hallway where you have classes coming out of the one side and out of the
in addition to the four or five gymnasium classrooms, how many classrooms might be affected by this constricted evacuation space?
All the rest of the buildings.
Well, how many classrooms is that about?
I believe very much a child has told me there was 80 classrooms.
Hmm. So aside from that safety concern, you mentioned the ABA facilities. Now, the accreditation people don't look at ABA compliance, do they?
Yes, they do.
They do. I'm sorry, I didn't know that. And in what respects is the temporary campus at Tijan non-compliant with ABA?
What I have viewed, okay, is there are no elevators to the second floor. The fire alarms, the visual fire alarms, are not in at least 8 of the classrooms. Most of the ones in the gym do not have the visual alarm. And as JFK is the home site, the central site for the hearing impaired, visual alarms are a must. There is at least one student who has orthopedic impairment. He cannot get into certain doors that have and that the large glass doors that are on the gymnasium, that are on the main office and the nurse's office, those doors do not have electronic openers. Therefore, he has to stand and wait on his crutches for those doors to be opened by somebody else before he can either enter or exit. The gravel in the parking lots where the handicap signs are placed would be extremely, extremely difficult for an individual in a wheelchair to get from their car into the building. And because of the way they're placed and that extra, if it were raining, they'd be soaking wet before they could get in. The handicap ramp for the main office, while the handicap signs and parking are on one side of the building, the handicap ramp to the main office and the nurse's office is on the other side of the building. So there's some difficulties with ADA.
We've had testimony, Ms. Hendricks, from a number of witnesses about the about cars going to and from the parking lot, driving right over the student passageways. Does this pose any sort of additional threat to the physically impaired?
And yes, it does. Because the only way people can get from, I guess what you would call the main parking lot, to the parking lot next to the main office is they would have, there's two cuts in the sidewalk opening so that cars can go through or trucks can go through. And there's two issues with that. One, it's uncovered, so a student who is impaired would have to, again, cross an area that could be wet due to rain, and cars cross that on a regular basis going in and out, and there's no warning signs or stop signs or any of that to indicate that these are sidewalks.
So, in your opinion, is this a life-threatening endangerment?
It could be, yes.
Well, going back to the accreditation issue, if it turned out that we didn't get confirmation of substantial interest, and if it turned out that because of that the appeal process held up the award of a construction contract to build a new school, and if it turned out that as of 2011, they were still there at the existing temporary campus, and as you testified, it's doubtful that there would be accreditation if they stayed there. What then would there be about lack of accreditation for the graduating students that would be detrimental to them? How would they suffer if they graduated from this temporary facility without WAC accreditation? What would be bad about that?
It would affect their ability to get into college. Their ability to get into college would require that they would have to have the upper 10% of SAT scores in the nation in order to be eligible for any college. I have spoken because of another issue that on another school, not on Island. I have discussed with the assistant director of BLASC, Marilyn George, what happens when a school is not accredited and they want to get into a college. If those colleges are accredited institutions, which most are, only 10% of their population can be from unaccredited schools. And again, they have to show academically what that these students could succeed in college. They usually enter on probation. And anybody that knows about college probation knows that you go on it for one semester, you have one more semester to show that you can make it, and then you're out. Well, they enter on probation. They don't enter fully admitted at that point. it would have an effect on the University of Guam from the standpoint that the University of Guam is a land-grant college. And because it is a land-grant college, any student who graduates from a high school on Guam is supposed to be able to be admitted to the University of Guam, just as an automatic. Okay, it's similar to the University of Wyoming. As any student who graduates from a high school in Wyoming automatically has admission. Where it endangers the University of Guam is that because many of the neighboring island schools are not accredited, they have been allowed to admit those students under the 10% rule. If JFK were to lose accreditation, then that could possibly decrease the number of students that would be eligible from the neighboring islands to come to Guam to go to a four-year college. So it's got a domino effect if they lose accreditation.
Aside from, you know, accreditation, sometimes people look at it as a label. It's emblematic of something. And what I'm trying to get at here is, what about the SAT tests? Aside from the accreditation rubric, it's accredited, it's not accredited, aside from that label, in the real world, when students who attend a compromised facility like JFK that has no chemistry lab, it has no library, it has so many defects, is this going to affect the scoring of students when they take their SAT tests?
I believe so, yes.
In what way?
Well, they won't have had the full curriculum, so because they haven't had the full curriculum, they may not be aware of some of the problems that will be placed on the SATs.
SATs are important for what reason?
The SATs are the most common test method used for admission into college.
All right, and are they fairly accurate in your opinion?
That's a difficult question. I think that sometimes they don't represent how much our kids know.
But is there any better yardstick than the SAT test that you know of?
Not that I know of. That's why most colleges and universities still use it. It's because it's been the best predictor.
So the major advantage of a high SAT score would be for admissibility purposes into universities.
Yes.
And do top universities like Harvard, like Yale, like MIT, schools of that level, do they generally accept graduates from unaccredited high schools?
I don't have any real knowledge on that particular bit, but it would be my supposition that probably not. Because they have so many kids that they can bring in that are from accredited schools that have SAT scores.
Well, considering the purpose of this hearing, Ms. Hendricks, this hearing being the time that the OPA will decide whether to confirm the determination of substantial interest made by the purchasing agency, can you explain to the public auditor and the hearing officer whether, in your opinion, there is a compelling need for the people of Guam and the students of Guam to proceed as soon as possible, at the earliest possible time, with the construction of the new high school?
I believe it is very important. I've always believed that we need to get our students into the best possible facilities at every level if we want them to be able to compete worldwide and globally. And we're looking at these young people to be our future leaders. And if we're going to have future leaders, we need them to be the best educated, and we need to provide them with the best facilities we can possibly provide them with. And when we choose to put aside, and say, well, facilities aren't important, well, then what we're doing is we're decreasing the opportunities for learning. We can have the best teachers in the world, but if we don't give them the proper place to teach it, then it's not going to matter how good they are. Because it's going to be difficult to do a curriculum when you can't do it the full curriculum. I have always, from the day I walked on this island 36 years ago, I've always believed that we should put our kids first. And I am slowly becoming very disillusioned with the fact that we don't put our kids first. We think it's okay to put them in makeshift buildings. It's okay to take away their CIP money and use it for something else. It's okay, because down the road we'll have something else for them. But the kids that are in that building right now, they're losing education that they're never going to get back. They're losing opportunities that they're never going to get back. And I just don't think it's right. I don't think it's right. I never have thought it was right. When I was principal of JFK, I fought and fought and fought to keep that building maintained and growing. They used to complain because I wanted it painted. They would complain because I wanted the louvers fixed. They complained when we started to do the air conditioning, putting the air conditioning in, and I wanted the windows sealed so the air conditioning would stay in. It's not a new fight for me. It's not a new fight for me, and it's unfortunate that I keep having to fight for it. Comment was made to me yesterday that we have other schools that are getting ready to be in the same situation as JFK. Why do we have to wait until we have the school closed down before we take care of them? And why do we say it's okay to delay and delay and delay and delay, putting in a new building?
Thank you very much, Ms. Hendricks. That was very interesting. I have no further questions, Mr. Hearing Officer.
Ms. Tang, do you have any direct examination of Ms. Hendricks?
Very limited.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you. I just want to follow up on one of the comments you made earlier. You said that this WASC accreditation was in jeopardy. In jeopardy was, I think, the word you used?
Yes.
And I think you expressed concern, numerous concerns. You listed six different concerns in terms of how the physical and environment affects the curriculum and the WASC accreditation, and ultimately, I think, the children's ability to get to colleges, correct?
Correct.
All right. Now, and you also mentioned that you served on accreditation, review boards of sorts.
I serve annually, back to almost at least once a year for the last 15 years. I have served on accreditation teams. I've served on one on Guam, and the rest have been in the islands.
Okay. I'm going to read an excerpt from what is called the Accreditation Handbook for Schools in the Pacific Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And I obtained this off of, this is a 2008-2009 edition from the WASC website.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with this document?
Yes, I am.
All right. One of the excerpts is, this is on page 13, and this is relating to the terms of accreditation. You mentioned that JFK was recently accredited for 2 years, correct?
Correct.
And this is the most recent visit.
Yes, that was in April of last year.
Of this year.
Of this year, yes.
All right. Now, I'm going to read an excerpt. This relates to 1 or 2 year accreditation. It's very brief. A term of 1 or 2 years with a complete progress report and revisit to serve as a warning that unless prompt attention is given to the major recommendations or critical areas, accreditation may be denied. Now, is it your understanding that any recommendations in the revisit report, if not executed or followed through, could result? It's really a warning. They're saying you better do this. It's not a suggestion. It's not an advice. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
And when they say warning, have you seen accreditation be denied in the past?
Yes, I have.
And is that usually done following a warning that's given by WASC?
Yes.
And I'd like you to look at Exhibit J.
which is before you. And if you go to page 2 of the document, which after the cover sheet, you first, under top it says environment, and it says recommendations right underneath that, priority and additional areas for improvement. The DPW task force and all stakeholders need to continue to advocate for the new building to be completed as soon as possible. And then above that, it says JFK has established a task force to work with other stakeholders to support reconstruction of the school at the original site, campus site.
Yes.
Is this just an advice, or does this rise to a level of a warning?
It would rise to a level of warning.
Now, these recommendations that are made by the WASC committee, and I'm going to read another excerpt for the from the handbook, and this is on page 30. It refers to recommendations made. Current two-year term. Schools that currently have a two-year term limit term as a result of a full self-study visit can receive a recommendation for either a one-year term or a denial of accreditation. So is that consistent with your understanding that if the recommendations or warnings made in this most recent report are not followed through, that JFK will only have an option of a one-year term of extended accreditation or a denial of accreditation? Those are the only options available.
Yes.
I have one more question on the location. The entrance school WASC has never looked at the Cuban location?
That is my understanding.
Yes. And when they were here, that was not the task force, I guess the board did not put that up as a long-term solution to the original campus site.
No, it was to be a very temporary situation. Our understanding was that they were in the process of negotiation on the rebuild contract, that the movement to Tijin could be as short as 3 months and at a maximum 6 months, that by Easter break, JFK would be back in a new building on the original site.
Okay.
That was our understanding in April.
I see. Now I'm going to read you an excerpt on the same and from the same handbook on page 2. The heading is Policy and Procedure for Substantive Change. In the event of a substantive change at an accredited school, WASC bylaws require an on-site review as a basis for continued accreditation. Substantive change includes a change in ownership of a proprietary school, change in grade level configuration of the school, or relocation of the school.
Yes.
Now, if the school is not built, if Jesse's school is not built, then do you agree that this provision regarding substantive change would have been triggered? Because if the school's been, in effect, relocated,
if we're going beyond, if it looks like we're going to be beyond this school year, if we would have to inform WASC of that, and it could, yes, trigger another visit.
And if it triggers another visit, pursuant to the provisions of the handbook, the only options available to JFK under the WASC rules would be either an accreditation for one more year or a complete denial.
Correct.
And based on your understanding of the environment and the configuration of the school and the way it affects the curriculum, what is your opinion, if any, as to whether the WASC will grant the one-year extension or deny accreditation?
I think that it would, again, I think accreditation would be in jeopardy because we gave them an assurance. And when I say we, I mean the school community, based on the knowledge we had at that time, was that we would not be in the interim site for an extended period of time, that we would only be there for a short period of time and then back into the facility. That's one of the reasons, my understanding why they didn't visit the Tejan site is because they had that assurity that they weren't going to be there that long. Unfortunately, I wasn't here on island during that. I was in Pompeii doing an accreditation visit, and ironically, that was the struggle at that time with whether or not we would give them a one-year recommendation or not because of the facilities.
So is it your opinion that more likely than not it will be not accredited as opposed to given continued accreditation if the school were relocated to Tejan?
I think it's very likely, yes, the last of accreditation.
Thank you.
Ms. Shanger, your turn.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Cunliffe, your witness.
Thank you. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very good. How about you?
Actually, you and I worked on an education task force together about 10 years ago, didn't we?
Yeah, it's been about 10 years. How time flows, huh?
And we're still in the same place. Accreditation doesn't only revolve around a facility. There's much more to accreditation than just what the facility is. Isn't that true?
That's true, yes.
And accreditation in Guam has been a problem in the 36 years you've been here.
We have never had a school get as close to losing it as JFK has been.
And that's the JFK at the old site?
Yes, it was at the old site.
And you said that they had a one-year accreditation previously, and now they've been given a two-year accreditation.
They've been given a two-year. They were given, my understanding is, the 2 years was because they figured this year they would be pretty much at a different site, but would be back.
And if in a year we're still in the same situation we are today, and that is JFK in Timuni is sitting there empty, there may be some action taken by WASC to take away the accreditation or slow it down or create other issues. Is that true?
Correct.
But if they're in the process of constructing a new facility and it's not complete yet, that's probably not going to happen. Isn't that true?
I think it would depend. It will depend on timelines, and it will depend on whether or not they feel that there's a good faith effort being made to move the school back.
So if they're in the process of building a new facility, you can see the walls are going up, or the roofs are being poured, or the windows are being put in, they can see that there's been a good faith effort, I would guess, and that would not be a danger at that point.
Well, I still would say that it will be dependent upon the timelines, how soon, and whether or not it appears like there's really an effort being made to move, to get this new school there.
And you testified on direct examination about other facilities that are housing students at other locations being kind of right behind JFK with regard to meeting the replacement.
I think that they are, yes. That's my personal opinion.
There's a lot of facilities that could certainly be demolished and rebuilt because of their antiquity and lack of maintenance.
There are several. I think that we have slowly rebuilt the worst of the worst. JFK is the next worst of the worst.
And the situations that you discussed about the problems at the interim facility,
mm-hmm.
you said you didn't have any involvement, your task force didn't have any involvement in the build-up or creation or outfitting of that facility.
No.
Okay. And if that's what the government requested, you don't know if that it's built to exactly what the government asked for or not.
No, I do not.
So, if the government said, don't pave the parking lots, just make them coral, that's a government issue, not the school's issue, correct? I mean, they put it in that condition.
I would yeah, and I would say yes, that is, but I would be very surprised if that was a government decision, considering all of the other issues that go on, but with a non-paved parking lot, especially in the area of ADA.
I would tend to agree with you, but we'll have testimony on that soon. The document exhibit J that's in front of you, you indicated is only a portion of the WASP report.
It seemed to me like there was a couple more pages, but the environmental stuff is here.
On the bottom of that page, it says page 11. It's not numbered as page 11, so I would presume there were 10 pages preceding it.
Well, the 10 pages preceding it would be a description of the school, a description of the visit, who was involved.
And there are recommendations in other areas besides environment.
Correct.
And if JFK or the government of Guam does not rise to the level of meeting those recommendations, they could also lose their accreditation.
Yes.
Now, how do these WASP members come? I mean, they're given a temporary 2-year extension, and you said if nothing's going, you'll have to report to them, or the government will have to report to them that JFK is not being built, or it's only halfway complete, or whatever the situation is at some point. And that may trigger them to come out again and look at the current environment.
Correct.
And when would that be? Like 6 months, a year? How is that determined?
They have to turn in an annual report. It's required that every school turn in an annual report in the spring of every year. And that means that they would have to turn in a report April or May. It would go before those reports are then go to the WASP Commission. The WASP Commission reviews those reports and either says, yes, everything is fine, we can continue on, or it can trigger them saying, we may need to take a visit.
And you said I believe that the school community or the educational community, when you use the word we, gave assurances that we would not be an interim site for a significant period of time. And who is that, I mean, specifically?
Well, basically, it is the school. And when I say we, I spent 33 years in BOE, and it's really hard for me to, The central office staff would have had to. I believe there was a meeting with the proposed contractor. The school the leadership, the teachers, they would have met with the whole school community, including parents.
Okay, so that's when you say the school community, you're talking about the JFK school community.
Yes.
And you indicated that in February or March, you went out, I guess at the request of the governor, to the site, which is now the interim facility?
Correct.
Okay. And so at that point, there was at least some indication that that might be turned into an interim facility?
Yes.
So when the WASP people were here in April, that information already existed that that might be or would be an interim facility?
That was the information that was given to them, that it would be a temporary for 3 to 6 months.
And who gave them that information?
That would have been given to them by DOE. And like I said, I was not on island at the time. I think that was my understanding.
I have nothing. Mr. Abrams, any redirect?
No redirect.
Ms. Tang, any redirect?
No, thank you.
Ms. Hendricks, given the present condition at Tinton right now, if the school were to stay there, it would appear that the school may end up staying there for the complete school year, this new school year. What would be your recommendation if they had to stay on another year? Would you recommend that they stay at Tinton? Would you recommend that they go back to double session at GW?
I would probably recommend that they go back to double session at GW.
Why would that be?
The health and safety. They are babies. ADA compliance issues, because I don't think our students with disabilities should have to suffer more. They can offer the full curriculum because the classrooms are set up at GW for the full curriculum.
In the past year when JFK was at double session, how was the environment there?
It was a difficult environment because the decision was made so late to go there. The two faculties didn't have an opportunity to really digest it before one felt invaded and the other felt put on.
I understand. Okay. But toward the end, did those things finally, pardon the expression, gel?
They were a lot better towards the end, but I think because both the solution, you know, was available, but I don't think anybody knew. They thought they were going to get back to their original school.
I'm just curious, you know, if there's one school, Southern High, that seems to be underutilized. What about that as a possible site?
And it could, my understanding is it has an enrollment right now of approximately 1,600. They can take about another 500 before the building would be at maximum. That would and probably about half of the community population, so they might be able to move some of the students down there, but it would mean breaking up the school. The unfortunate thing is the other four high school, or the other three high schools, would not be able to absorb the rest of the population because of their current populations themselves. They're overcrowded.
And even with the new Okadoo High School?
Okadoo opened full. It actually opened over its projected enrollment.
And where does the population of JFK usually come from?
Dedido, Tumenin, Harmon, Haganya, all the way to Maina on this side of the island. Spent in Dedido.
So, given the geography, then it would not be possible for the Southern High to absorb the entire JFK population?
No. Not with their current enrollment.
So, because I thought that Southern High was around under 1,000 the last time I checked.
They're about, what the principal told me last week was between 1,500 and 1,600.
So given the scenario, relocation or absorption is not a viable alternative. Given it would appear then is...
We have looked at that option.
Okay.
Okay, the task force had actually looked at that option of moving because we literally left no option off the table. Any suggestion anybody had, we took a serious look at it and what effect it would have and how we could redo it. The original one that we started to work with was using the annex building, which is 20 classrooms, on the original site and Brady Memorial. But that meant relocating approximately 300 elementary students, teachers, and having to renovate that to adult size. The best example probably is the UNIS. Okay? And we jokingly said, well, we could just have the boys get on their knees, but the point was that it was going to take money, and what we were trying desperately to do was to find a solution that was not going to break the government. You know, because, you know, we all know there's no money right now. And so we looked at every option that somebody could put on the table. Somebody said, well, what about the Ben Franklin building? We took a look at that. Not enough space. There wouldn't have been enough space. Then again, it would have required us renting. And so we didn't turn anything down. We looked at it.
Are you aware of what the temporary facility is costing the government?
Somebody told me yesterday $4 million a year. I just about choked.
Closer to four and a half.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So then, given the current facilities of T-Zone versus double session, if JFK were to continue another year, your recommendation again would be to
go back to the double session. Academically, it would be better. And I'm sorry to say that. I'm sad to say that, to be honest.
Is it because of the current physical layout and condition, primarily?
Yeah. I really do feel, having been a school principal, one of the first things I look at when I'm looking at a facility is what are the supervision and the dangers. And when I see recess doors, and believe me, I fought to keep recess doors out of Southern High. And they've already, they can attest to the fact that they are a problem. Because students step back into those doors and nobody can see them, so you don't know what's going on. An incident occurred at the Teason campus on Friday. The PE teacher was in the gymnasium. There are two sets of restrooms for those indoor classrooms that are in the gymnasium. Well, somebody went, broke the door handle off of the boys' locker room. Nobody saw it. Went in, robbed all the kids' belongings in there. And they could go out the back door and nobody would even see them. But those doors are recessed, so they're not visible unless you're standing there looking at them. And if you're looking at the recess of the, like, for the girls' locker room, you can't see the recess for the boys' locker room. That means you've got to have two people. And then they're supposed to be teaching. And you don't want 28 kids behind you when you're not watching them, because then you create another safety issue. It's difficult. And when you go down the hallways of the different buildings, there's recesses. So there's places to hide.
I know you mentioned earlier that you were not part of the committee evaluating the interim facility. To your knowledge, do you know, was there a committee evaluating and expressing concerns as to what should be at the interim facility?
I know that the superintendent appointed Steve Potasio to represent DOE, and that's all I really know, because he did not report to the task force. He didn't give us any information as to what was occurring, even though after we were finding out most of the stuff about the interim from the media.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman,
please speak to the mic. Would you like to do a brief redirect?
Very brief.
Please proceed.
Ms. Hendricks, with respect to the question posed by the public auditor about the preference of staying at the temporary facility with all of its shortcomings of going back to GW, you, as other witnesses, have said that a return to double session at GW would be preferable. Now, that's not going to alleviate the crisis situation.
No, it isn't.
It's going to be changing one problem for another severe problem.
Correct.
Isn't the ultimate solution to get the new high school built at the earliest possible moment?
Yes, yes.
And have you any idea whether WASC would give its blessing to a return to GW and the double sessions in lieu of moving into the new JFK facility?
I think that they would look at the accreditation of both JFK and GW, because it's not an ideal situation.
Well,
and WASC is very adamant about teaching and learning and having the proper facilities.
It's not a certainty that if they go back to double sessions at GW that all of a sudden WASC is going to say, that's great, here's your accreditation again.
No.
That was not even in the equation, was it? When
no.
Okay.
No.
So that's an open-ended question. We'll assume you're right, that it would probably be in the better interest of the students to go back to double sessions at GW compared to staying in a temporary facility. But that doesn't mean that automatically they're going to get another accreditation, because WASC didn't even consider that. They, if I understand your testimony correctly, they said you better get into that new facility by 2011, and if you don't, we're not going to accredit the school. They didn't say get into the new facility or go back to double sessions at GW now, did they?
No, they did not.
Yeah, so they may end up giving an accreditation like they did before if JFK were at GW, but they may not.
Correct.
Which would be more likely, that they would or they wouldn't, or do you not want to speculate?
It would be a difficult speculation. Mm-hmm. I think that if we went back to double session, then I think the accreditation of GW would also be in consideration.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a crisis situation when it was going on, if I recall correctly.
Correct. And WASC took that into account, that it was a crisis, that it was not something that was created out of choice.
If I'm not mistaken, there was something like a shortfall of 90 instructional hours for each student that, I don't know if I remember, I just read it in the newspaper, but because of the double sessions, there was a shortfall in the required number of teaching days or something like that, was it?
Teaching minutes. We operate under a Carnegie unit, and a Carnegie unit is 120 instructional hours. And if you work that out, that's 7,200 minutes of instruction for a single Carnegie unit. That's a full unit. What JFK was doing last year was a 70-minute block. They were 10 minutes short. Every time they met, they were losing 10 minutes of instruction to meet a Carnegie. And so that was, that worked out, I'm trying to remember what the total was. That was 900 minutes of instruction that was lost because of the double session.
I have
per class.
Thank you, Ms. Hendricks. I have no further redirect. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Chang, any further redirect?
No, thank you.
Mr. Cunliffe, any more questions? Okay. Ms. Hendricks, thank you for coming today and testifying. I'm going to excuse the witness for now, subject to recall, of course, by the parties. And as these proceedings have not concluded, I'm simply going to admonish you to not discuss your testimony with any of the other witnesses in the matter or with either of the parties. Thank you for coming today.
Okay, thanks.
Do you have any other witnesses, Mr. Abrams?
No, Mr. Hinton-Officer, we rest.
Well, we have completed the purchasing agency's presentation of evidence. We are now at the appellant's presentation of evidence. Mr. Cunliffe?
Yes. If you wouldn't mind if we could just take about a two-minute restroom break, and my witness should be out here, Mr. Joshua Tenorio.
Very well. Let's take a five-minute recess, and we'll reconvene.
You're correct.